This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I don't think I'm coming in tomorrow. Tomorrow is going to be an interesting day. Go to the dentist tomorrow. But since I go to the dentist at 8:45, it means I need to get grocery shopping done before that so I can get home and do some more reading. Which means I need to be at my dad's house at 6:45 to pick up their list so I can get grocery shopping done. So I can get everything back to their house and actually be down to the dentist at 8:45. And today, tomorrow is the day, dun, 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 when I tell the dentist that I will get my teeth whitened. Oh, this day has been many years in coming. Oh, man. Okay. Anyway, so yes, I have a very kind dentist who's been wanting to whiten my teeth for months and months and months and months and months. And every time I'm down there, she talks about it. And so I think this is going to be the time when I say, okay, yeah, sure. Anyway, so I have... Whoa, hey, that's right. Come on. I'm sitting here at a stop sign just jabbering away, not really like I'm at a stoplight. So I'm taking a slightly different route because I am, in fact, going to my parents-in-law's house for dinner, and it will be maybe a little shorter podcast. I don't know. We'll see. I say they're shorter, and then I just yakety-yak. So that's interesting. I'm still reading through, but I feel like the book is settling in. I'm doing character read-throughs at this point, just going through every section that deals with a specific character, making sure that, you know, things overlap nicely, but then, you know, pick it back up and yada yada. Once I do that, then I've got one more full read through to do. Once I get that done, then the next big thing is getting the cover done. So, it's probably going to be mid-March at this point, because it's going to take me another week to get through the full read through probably. And then we've got to find a time. We've got to find a costume for my granddaughter. We got to find a time to actually shoot it. It's going to be a little tight here. But it'll all work out. It'll be fine. I just don't need to be so verbose next time. Still working on ideas for the next book in the Windfall series. Windfall, A Seed in Secret. Still mulling where I'm going to go. Kind of have an idea, but then I had too much of ideas and I was like, oh, that's going to be another 150,000 word book. So now I'm trying to figure out how to kind of shave it down and take out certain strategic pieces so that, it doesn't get too long. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. That's going to be interesting. I think I know where I want to end, so I've got to get those pieces in play as well. It'll be fine. Anyways, everything went well this week. We actually released to beta one of the projects I've been working on for the last several months here, and the response was very kind. People seemed to like it. They seemed to understand what we were trying to do and understand the screens, and so that's good. But I have been talking all day today. My first meeting started at 8:30 this morning. I had an 8:30 to 9:30, a 9:30 to 10:30, a 10:30 to 11:30. I had a 12:30 to 1:45. Then I had a 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock. And then I did some tweaks and fixes to the program that we had discussed in some of those meetings through there. So it's been a long day. Anyways, this week I said that I would finish up with the Sexodus Part 2. which was an interesting series of articles. You may recall last week that I forgot my recorder. I did it with my phone, which was horrible. So there was great rejoicing in the land now that I have my recorder back. And I actually have some notes. So this is actually part two. I kind of fluffed my way through part one. But what it comes down to is that being a man in this culture, in this day and age, often there's all kinds of things that we get accused of and, you know, diminished by, and especially in relationships with women. And there are enough pressures and forces that some guys, you know what, they just don't want to be bothered anymore, which I can understand that attitude. I can understand that perfectly, that if some guys, and it's not that they're gay, they're very much heterosexual, they just don't want the hassle and the drama and the demands and the, you know, responsibilities and the necessities of maintaining a relationship, making a commitment to a relationship, which I can understand that. So this part two was examining that some more. I thought it was pretty interesting. They made the point that Milo Yiannopoulos, I think is his name, made the point at the beginning of the article that this idea of sexual dysfunction is not unique to the 21st century, nor to just the West. In Japan, I guess there's a group of men who call themselves herbivores, who shun sex and prefer saving money. They go on long walks. They prefer going on long walks to riding motorcycles and flirting with girls, and they've been well documented and are regarded by social scientists as the best example of male sexuality turning on itself. But the author of the article goes on to say, what's troubling about men throwing in the towel in both the East and West is the rapidity with which the malaise is spreading across entire generations, fueled not just by sexual dissatisfaction, but also the economic and educational pressures that are felt by so many young boys. And so they talk about, it's not surprising that some men go on to, you know, somewhat extreme measures when it comes to trying to have relationships with the opposite sex. There's a whole pickup artist school that is trying to teach men how to manipulate women into having sex with them. And I read a book about this, and, you know, the techniques do work. It's not that they don't work. And I've read other men who have been players in the past, and they just freely come out and say that the worse they would treat women, the more women were available to them, which that's a whole other topic. But that seems to be true, that certain types of men, you know, very macho, very masculine, the very belligerent, the very attitudinal, that they attract a far, it's not a higher caliber of women, that's not what we're going to say, but a far higher class is not even a good word, class of women, at least in the secular sense. You know, the really good-looking women, the ones that are, you know, they like to go out and party, they like to go out and drink, and that kind of stuff, that it's much easier to attract those women if you're more ugly towards them. Which, and there's reasons for that, but, you know, never mind. But anyway, some would say then that this struggle that men are having relationships with women, that part of the problem is unrealistic female expectations. He said that getting laid with attractive women has become extremely hard for the average man. Women today of average or even below average quality desire an elite man with above average look, muscles, intelligence, and confidence. If an average girl works hard enough, she will be able to have a one-night stand with a hot guy every now and then because he happened to be horny and wanted to get an easy lay. That's actually true. You know, even any kind of average girl can primp herself up and run out and keep throwing herself at guys, and eventually she'll have a one-night stand with a guy. He goes on to say, then the girl thinks... Or this is another guy saying this. Then the girl thinks that she can actually get such a man to commit to her for the long term, so doesn't give average guys a chance, holding out for the type of stud that she had a brief sexual encounter with in the past, which is kind of interesting. And I'm not sure about this next part, but this guy, Zadez, goes on to say, I'm not sure about this part. He said, what's also complicating the problem, according to him, is that, quote, it's also damaging that the attractiveness of women is rapidly declining, mainly due to the obesity epidemic. No matter what the members of the fat acceptance movement say, men have an innate need for fit women. What happens is the few attractive girls left get unimaginable amounts of attention. According to this guy, Valizadeh, today's sexual marketplace represents a Pareto distribution in which about 20% of the top guys have access to 80% of the best women, which has the effect of leaving women holding out for the perfect man, a man who, of course, never comes. So... And there's other people that are making comments on this. Masculinity author Jack Donovan makes the claim that men have been feminized by a culture that rejects and ridicules male characteristics and habits. Quote, good luck naming one male role model that men have today that actually helps men become men. So he goes on to say that... That the current state of the sex wars are bizarrely constituted. It says one of the remarkable things about the recent high-profile skirmishes with feminists is how few mainstream heterosexual men have been involved. In the Gamergate video games controversy, opposition to social justice warriors and their attempts at censorship on Twitter has come from older gay men in public life and younger geeks, gamers, and dropouts. In the case of Matt Taylor, it was geeks and other women. Straight young men simply don't want to know anymore. They're not getting involved. Some women, too, are horrified by what, according to this article, lesbianized third-wave feminism claims to do in their name, and they opt out of the argument. He said the absurd result is that geeks, this is his terms, queers, dykes, and dykes are dominating the discussion about how men and women should interact. Jack Donovan, for example, is gay, as is your present correspondent. So the guy's writing this article. He said it's as if gays are the only men left prepared to fight in masculinity's quarter. Strikes some women odd in this is that they were saying if young men don't get or need to be trained out of white knight behaviors instilled by them by the female culture, and by that they mean that men have been taught that being a nice guy gets you laid and it doesn't actually, that a lot of these guys are rationally and systematically approaching the decision of whether or not they're going to be. And many young men literally perform a cost-benefit analysis and decide that women are not worth the hassle. So in this scenario, though, it's really the women who lose out. Men don't feel the need for a sustained emotional intimacy that comes from a fulfilling sexual relationships, and they can retreat into... A, pleasuring themselves, prostitutions, and one-night stands. Because if they go out enough, they can find someone to sleep with for a night. or they can just take care of themselves, or they can just use prostitution. And of course, that's its own trap. Because then the more you use prostitution and self-pleasuring, then the less incentive you really have to have any kind of a long-term relationship. What's interesting as well is that men, as many like to say, men are driven by fact, not emotion, and can see society that society is not fair to them and more dangerous for them. They point to the fact that they are more likely to be murder victims, more likely to be commit suicide. Women do not choose to serve in the armed forces, and they experience fewer deaths and injuries in the line of work generally. Women get shorter custodial sentences for the same crimes. There are more scholarships available to women in college. They receive better and cheaper health care. I'm not sure about that one, because my wife's health care is certainly more expensive. And can pick from favorable insurance packages available only to girls. When it comes to children, women are presumed to be the primary caregivers and given preferential treatments by the courts. They have more and better contraceptive options. Women are less likely to be homeless, unemployed, or to abuse drugs than men. They are less likely to be depressed or to suffer mental illness. There is less pressure on them to achieve financial success. They are less likely to live in poverty. They are given priority by emergency and medical services. Now, what's interesting is that some might look at all that kind of stuff and say, well, that's female privilege. And yet, men's advocates then will say that the lived experience and the perceived oppression of men is given 100% of the airtime, in defiance of the reality that women haven't just achieved parity with men, but have overtaken them in almost every conceivable respect. This is what the guy says. So, guys are looking at this stuff, and they're also looking at these ideas of rape culture and patriarchal privilege and blah, 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 blah. And a lot of them are just like, okay, never mind. And it's not just video games and casual sex that they're retreating into. They're also immersing themselves in fetishes that their grandparents, generation would say resemble grounds for incarceration. And that just pushes them farther away. So they go find, you know, kind of all these fetishes and these outlying sex things to do. And, you know, they don't care. So they get their jollies there and it doesn't really matter anymore whether they have real women. He did go into a section that was very, very interesting, because when there was a stigma associated with being gay, many gay men would actually get married, have a few children, and then lead a double life to pursue their forbidden urges. Well, now they don't do that anymore. And he makes a side note that's a pretty little interesting side note. As a side note, here's an argument that you won't read elsewhere. Quote, gay men test significantly higher on average for IQ, and we know that IQ is at least partially genetically determined. Gays don't reproduce as much now. As much now because they don't have to keep up the pretense of straight relationships. In fact, the surveys say they barely reproduce at all. Is it a stretch, this guy says, is it a stretch to ask whether society's newfound tolerance for homosexuality has made society, well, a bit more stupid? Which gets us back to the idea of the idiocracy. He says, granted, it sounds far-fetched, but while there's no doubt that liberating gay men from the shame of their double lives has been a moral imperative, well, okay, driven by compassion, no rapid social change comes without trade-offs, which is kind of an interesting idea. That's crazy. Anyways, so they write these articles, you know, and it gets shared all over Facebook. He has said he's had over 16,000 readers leave comments. Over 500 men wrote to me privately to express their gratitude and support from every continent and all age groups. The younger men spoke especially movingly. Predictably, hundreds of angry feminists on Twitter scorned it as entitled whining from white male man babies. Okay, which kind of, again, proves the point that this is the point of the story, that when men look at that kind of reaction, they go, you know what? Never mind. So just some quick just some quick things from different of the commentators, which is interesting. Mark says, he's 24, everyone I know feels the same. Your article spoke directly to us. We're not all losers and nerds. We're just normal guys who are either scared of being accused of terrible stuff by harpies or simply can't be bothered anymore. I can't believe I'm saying this, but I just can't deal with the hassle of women anymore. Mickey said, I say no to the whole thing, even though I'm very heterosexual and would like the intimacy of a relationship based on mutual respect. Well, I thought I did, but it's been so long and the standard of behavior for women remains so low, along with my tolerance of dating BS, that it doesn't look like a realistic desire anymore. Francis says, he's 28, I'm an athlete, my parents have a lot of money, I have plenty of friends and a good social life, I don't hang out with women anymore. Occasionally I'll have one-night stands, but I mostly fill my time with other things. I got accused of molesting a girl at college, and since then I've just thought, whatever, I play sports instead. Tilo says, girls are a nightmare. I have a brother who's 10 years older, and he feels the same way. We have given up. Hector says, I did stick to that social belief for a brief time, thinking that the need for a serious relationship would come with age, but it never happened, and slowly I gave up. Today, a few hours before reading your article, I was having lunch with my mother, and she kept talking about girlfriends and how I needed to get married, and I kept thinking, why would I waste my life with this S? And it wasn't until I read your article a few hours later that I realized, and I just don't think my generation, I don't think it's just my generation affected by this. So it's very interesting. He finishes up with kind of an interesting statement. He says, men created most of what is good in the world. The excesses of masculinity are also, to be sure, responsible for much of what is bad. But if we are to avoid sliding into decline, mediocrity in a world in which men are actively discriminated against, we must arrest the decline in social attitudes toward them before so many victims our claim that all hope of reconciliation between the sexes is lost. If that happens, it will be the women who suffer, which is, I would say, honestly, thinking and knowing what I think and know, I think, about men and women, it would be the women who suffer. Because guys' needs are pretty simple. And frankly, a guy's needs can be satisfied pretty easily without women. And it is the women who seek to build a family. And a lot of guys, that's not really that important to them. It's the women who seek the companionship of being with someone. And guys can kind of sidestep around that. So it's going to be really fascinating. Now, of course, how did we get here? Well, that's easy. This is all just flesh, 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 flesh. And it's the overstating. We're not really looking for a mutual solution. What we're playing is a zero-sum game. That it's not a matter of we want to be equals. It's we want everything our way. And when people are constantly in that churn of we want everything our way, then what comes about from that is destruction. And on a macro scale, what we're seeing on is destruction. And it's destruction based on fear. It's destruction based on greed. It's really going to be fascinating to see how this all works out in the next 20 or 30 years. And really, it's going to be fascinating to see if the whole idiocracy thing really plays out, because it's true. A lot of the really intelligent people are not having a lot of kids. And so I think there's just, it could very well be that there is a relationship between the ease and comfort of life and the pursuit of those things which just enhance our lives, there's a relationship with that and what becomes of the human spirit and the human intelligence, that in fact it declines, into I want what I want when I want it, and people should just do what I want, and I can't believe in it, you know, which is flesh. It's going to be fascinating. Anyways, I got to go have supper with my in-laws and some relatives, and it's been a good day. It's been a good week. I have not made it home, but this is Phil Ferrand.